Strictly an upper band, yes, it's strictly an upper band. But they make a very strong case, you know, that there's more heat flux coming out from those two things. That creates a problem.
Before you remove the transparency, what is QS?
Satellite.
Oh, it's
Q satellite. I should have been high because it's just, okay, I pulled this out of an old paper and notation. Yeah, the satellite. I did it right up here, but I changed it there, unfortunately, sorry. The reason this is a problem in driving these heat, these Q values down so low, is we have a lower bound on Q. It'll be deflecting up, something deflect the wind up here. If I can write the orbital angular momentum of each one of the satellites in this way, and the total is just the sum of the three, and the exit distance, and we get the absolute lower bound on Q, we assume the Laplace relation has been in existence for all of history, 4.6 × 10⁻⁹ years, and that the tides on raised on Jupiter, therefore, have to push the whole system out to where it is now. So the total time derivative, okay, I add these things up, and noting that the ratio of the semi-major axis is now fixed as I move it out, okay, and the E's have reached their equilibrium values, therefore are constants, I only have to worry about the time derivative of the semi-major axis, and I can neglect E squared in the quantities, okay? So the total time derivative is given by this term in terms of the time rate of change of semi-major axis, okay. And that's equal to the total torque on the system. And you'll recognize this equation was stable up, but now I have three of them because I have three satellites. And this is exactly the same thing involving QJ now. But now averaged over all of history. It's QJ averaged over all of history. And the tidal torque on these two, the Europa and Ganymede is so small that all it does is change this 1.5 to 1.53. And so I put it all in terms then of the semi-major axis of U.
Stan, can I ask about, because of the strong art of the fifth power,
yes,
and the fact that Jupiter was bigger.
Oh yeah.
Has someone done a redo of this with the current cooling model?
If one does the model of Jupiter, of course, this RJ was much bigger than that.
Right.
And therefore you had a much stronger acceleration. And therefore the average QJ would have to be the lower bound on QJ. In other words, the QJ I get will be a really absolute lower bound because it assumes the radius of Jupiter is the same.
Right.
All the way down. So it's really the absolute lower bound,
right,
that you have averaged over all of history. It's probably...
I guess what I'm asking is, has someone done... I mean, there's sort of the obvious calculation of doing this with somebody's model of cooling Jupiter.
I don't know.
Take this integral,
right? I think so. It should be done.
It should be done. It's a very interesting issue. Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll come back to this, but one possibility, of course, is that the system right now is behaving differently from what it did in the first few years.
Right, exactly. Well, absolutely.
So that's what you mean, is it, by this average of QJ, that it's reflecting somehow the progression of the development of the planet itself?
That's true. Because, we know that QJ has probably changed over the whole lifetime of the planet.
And would you expect it to be more lossy in the earlier stages, or it's more nebulous, let us say?
In fact, you need it to be the opposite. I'll tell you why.
We need to be the opposite.
Yeah, you want it to be more dissipated now. You want it to be more dissipated now.
Really?
In the lower bound, you're going to explain it.
So, in the 0.53 relation in RJ to the fifth time.
Yeah. And this is an equation that's easily solved. You can find from the initial semi-major axis of the yield to the final semi-major axis of the yield, and the time involved. And if we assume that the time allowed is the whole age of the solar system, 4.6 × 10⁻⁹ years, and we put the you're as close to Jupiter as you can have and still evolve out. And then we put it in this orbit, it's the I zero. Then it leads to a QJ average of 9 × 10⁴. Q must be bigger than that, like 10⁵, in order to keep EO at its current position. And this really is an absolute lower bound, the average value of Q. Now, if you compare, in other words, Q greater than 10⁵, if you compare those numbers with some of the other ones I showed previously, they were less than that. Okay? In other words, the heat flows in particular gave very low Qs for Jupiter compared to this 10⁵ that we get from the bounds and the dynamics. So we have these bounds put on Jupiter. Okay? Expanding unit tide, raised in Jupiter, places bounds, 10⁵, less than QJ, and less than 1.2 × 10⁶. This is just pretty tight. Okay. It's pretty tight. Now, there's another way to approach this.
Actually, I could just make a small comment. Like, related to what you said, there's another major uncertainty, which is the sequence of resonances the satellites went through.
True.
And that affects the amount. If I was by itself, then it tends to be pushed out quite rapidly, whereas if it's in resonance, so if it were to hit Europa quite late, then it would be pushed out much more rapidly than if it hit Europa early. If the Laplace resonance was established.
That's very true. In fact, Adam did some work with Renewable Object on looking at these other resonances in great detail. When you look at the problem, and another point that you're looking at energy considerations alone, okay, ignore the properties of EO. With the exception, we assume the system is in equilibrium, in resonance. Okay. So then we assume all these eccentricities are fixed at their equilibrium values. The reason Ganymede has a large undamped component of its eccentricity, which exceeds the forced eccentricity, and that's why its periapsis is not confined in the resonance of Ganymede. So I can write these two equations down. The total time derivative of the total angular momentum of the three-body system is just equal to the total torque, and the rate of change of the orbital energy is the rate at which the tides do work on the system, minus the energy which is dissipated. Okay? And I'm confining this both to just the torque on EO, because remember the other thing was like 0.03 out of 1.53, okay? And the heat will be dissipated mainly in here as well. Okay? So given those two equations, and H is the rate of dissipation of energy, where we neglect the small dissipation in Europa and Ganymede, as well as the torque they're on, okay, for the reason I just told you. Okay, in equilibrium, the orbital semi-major axes remain unchanged, so I get this relationship. Both ratios have to remain constant. So I write the angular momentum as I wrote before, this is in here, and I write the eccentricity, or the energy. It's just the orbital energy, it's just the product of the masses over 2a, the negative sign, the Catalan. Yeah, I did have a negative sign. Minus that. Okay. And with this condition, in these relationships, I can solve for the heat dissipation. Okay. And it's in terms of all these quantities, all of which I know. I've neglected the e squared. Okay, it's here in this analysis. But I know all of those things, and I can solve for h. And I know what the torque is, okay? And I put QJ as the minimum, average, 10⁵, okay? And then I get a total energy dissipation of 2.9 × 10⁰ hertz per second. And that leads to a rate of change of EO's centimeter axis of 0.262 centimeters per year, or a rate of change of the mean motion of that should be 1 over n, I'm sorry. There should be a 1 over n. 1 over n the MET is minus 2.2 times 10 to the minus 11. I'm pushing the orbit out, and therefore the mean motion decreases.
So this is the condition from energy loans, just like there's no poverty deal, fuel deal, nothing, except the assumption of the equilibrium condition.
The local, thank you, reached over the local poll.
Yeah, observations. Which we can attempt to measure how fast Eagle's already is moving out. And the only reason we can do this is that Eagle's been watched for 300 years. And the reason it was watched for 300 years, the purely commercial, is British, the Royal Astronomical Observatory, its sole purpose was to keep track of the satellites. Because they could make charts and tables of these things, so anywhere in the world, you would know when it was eclipsed. And you could just look up at Jupiter and see when the satellite was eclipsed, and you know what time it is. And therefore you could calculate the longitude of it. And so all this, and the Royal Venice Observatory is a wonderful place to visit. But you should read a book before you go to the
observatory.
Exactly. And it has a wonderful collection of these clocks, and it has the first ship's clock that was successful.
The first ones were made entirely of wood.
Yes,
amazing.
Yes. I mean, the guy who invented it, I forgot his name, but the book is called Longitude. And it's Goodall, is that the author? Is the author. But it's a short little book, but it's a wonderful book, you know, just describing this guy's genius. He built clocks, you know, and some of his clocks are still working in England. You can go see them. Some of them native wood. But he was very elegant. He would put differential various metals in his penduli to account for temperature variations, to keep the pendulum the same length. And he had remarkably accurate clocks. And he invented the first one that would work on a rocking boat. Well, the most recent measurement of Q, and this is from mutual events, in other words, the satellites come in front of each other or go into eclipse. If they want over the NDT of 3 times 10 to the minus 10 per year, with a positive sum, okay? Eagle spiral in, according to Axis. Okay? It's not that different from an earlier measurement by Goldstein and Jacobs, which is plus 4.5 times 10 to the minus 10 per year. Biesky in 1987 got a minus 0.74, plus or minus 0.87, his error was bigger than his measurement. 10 to the minus 11 per year. Now, in defense of these guys, these are very difficult things to get to happen. It depends on what you assume for your time standards and all kinds of various subtleties that come in calculating these things. So this calculated value we got was minus 2.2 times 10 to the minus 11. Compared to these things in the opposite direction. And I got a slightly different number, 7.4 times 10 to the minus the QJ, slightly smaller value, 10 to the minus 4. And I think there were some other different assumptions in that as well. So what if the system is really decaying with a positive VMDT? Okay. In other words, the system would not be in equilibrium, being forced out by Jupiter, it would be decaying one the other way. And so therefore, could the resonance have been primordial, but somehow it was assembled when the system was formed, and you let the thing then decay as this goes on. Because the dissipation in EO, we can measure, that's decreasing the eccentricity. So this would be a result, these positive numbers would be a result of the torque from Jupiter vanishing, trying to push EO out, or getting very small, and letting the dissipation in EO dominate, and actually pull the system.
If you assume that, and you assume that the Q of I is some value that allows the current heat flux to exist, presumably you could extrapolate that in time and find out when that condition would be violated.
Sure.
How long does that take?
Sure. Okay, sure.
Hang on.
The postulation that this three-body exquisite dance that they're going through becomes unstable if the eccentricity is too large. And it's not that large, it's 0.012. The current eccentricity is 0.0041 on 0.0041.
So that's about three times current eccentricity in the condensed field. And this corresponds to this difference of the mean motion, mean I minus 2 against B, and 0.14 degrees per day. The current value of this number is 0.74 degrees per day. We're zero torque from Jupiter. Okay. We show up torque from Jupiter. This station in the satellites causes the eccentricity K with conserved angular momentum. Conserved angular momentum because they're locked in synchronous rotation. So I can't get any angular momentum out of the rotation, so it must come out of the world. So the tidal change in A sub I can be converted into a variation in eccentricity in this condition. Remember, the angular momentum depended on the product of A times 1 minus E squared under a square root. And the 2-to-1 frequency, nu times Ni minus 2 into B, okay, and that's equal to A minus 2 into J. So I can put this variation in the semi-major axis to variation of E and variation of nu, and this is the expression I can get. Now, if I know that I can start out with a maximum eccentricity of 1.12, and I can go there now down to my 0.041 where I am today, right? Means I can calculate all these things. And the total energy, because I can compare the orbital energy from where I start, the orbital energy I get back, okay, from the change in the center of the major axis, will be 5.5 times 10 to the 35th curves, which now the all the energy deposited in yield. So I can calculate how much energy I have available from decaying the system from its maximum depth into the resonance to its current position in the center. The radiogenic deposition of heat in yield would be about 1.6 to 2.1 times 10 to the 36th curves over this same period. 4.6 times 10 to the 9 years. And since tidal dissipation should exceed radiogenic to account for the difference between the mass from the moon Io, this would imply much more tidal heating than that necessary to relax the system from its deepest depth in the resonance to its current position. In other words, it looks like we have a lot more dissipation that's not been that necessary to do that relaxation. Therefore, Jupiter must supply some torque to retard the relaxation. You know, to provide the energy in this dissipation. Otherwise, the system would have relaxed to smaller eccentricities and larger values of nu than we see today, 4.6 and 10 to the 9th years. In addition, the relaxation time for E1 to go from 0.012 to 0.041 is just as 3.4 times 10 to the 6 Q sub I over F years. And if delta T is 4.6 times 10 to the 9th years, Q sub I over F would have to be 1,400, okay, which could not supply the current heat flux. Couldn't get the heat flux out of that kind of Q. And it would be a very interesting place. So given the strong Jupiter torque necessary to keep the resonance from relaxing too fast, okay, the eccentricity must be close to the equilibrium value, whether or not the resonance is primordial. Doesn't matter. You have to have some torque from yield to provide the dissipation we see in yield. Because if we put the dissipation in yield that we've seen today and started out at 0.012 dissipation actually increased with higher eccentricity, okay, it would decay to the current state in a few million years. It would go down very fast. So in other words, whether or not the resonance is primordial, the bounds on Q are secure. That upper bound of Q times 1.2 times 26. So this is just that if T is equal to zero, then I can take it out of that previous equation and solve for H again. And this H of 3.41 times 10 to the 21 hertz per second for this 3 times 10 to the 10th per year, this Axne's value. Okay, this is what the heat flux would be, heat generation yield would be if Axne's is
is correct, it comes down. So it looks like, no matter what you do, you have to come up with some theory for the interior of Jupiter, which will allow Q less than its upper bound, the lower 10 to the sixth. And it's had a checkered history with Q. It's first attempted curve of the viscosity, and King Hubbard came up with a number of about 10 to the sixth, or 5 times 10 to the sixth. Big Will Rush and Nicholson came along and said, no, you did it all wrong. The real value is 10 to the 13 for Q. Okay. And then we were rescued by Dave.
Yeah, I will talk about it later.
Dave will show us later of a first order phase transition of helium. You have helium raindrops, you know. And because of the first order phase transition, there's hysteresis and the tidal oscillation, which cools and heats and cools and heats as in the tidal frequency, which can lead to a low Q. And then there's a paper, turns out a controversial paper, by Piano, I don't know how to pronounce his name, and Lindzen, okay, who hypothesized a stably stratified layer in Jupiter. Okay. And if the Brunt Prisala frequency, that frequency is if you move a system of gas adiabatically in that stratified layer, it finds itself too dense for its surrounds and sink back down, so that thing will oscillate at this frequency in that system. If that's resonant with EO, tidal perturbations, okay, which frequency is the difference in EO's motion and the rotation of Jupiter, then he comes up with even quite low Q, even down to 10 Q. Laura says,
well, I'll talk about it again.
Yeah, we'll get to it. We'll get plenty of time to do one more time.
Why would it be resonant?
Sorry?
Why would that drive a...
Doesn't have to be.
No, it doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be, no. And that was the criticism Laura's had. I mean, it's completely ad hoc.
Right.
There's no basis for his assumptions that leads to this question. And as I recall, there's not even very clear how the discourse occurs in this oscillation.
Well, we'll get to that, okay? Mm-hmm. It may not be important exactly how
it is provided. I just want to leave you with the fact, however, that the upper bound on Q is pretty strong in the dynamics. And so one has to come up with a way to get that dissipation into the...
You didn't say it explicitly, but it is true, is it not, that if Acme's were correct, that this cannot be the case for the entire history of the system.
Oh, of course not.
Yeah. And this would happen in
And that means that there has to be some time variability somewhere in the Q of Io or the Q of Jupiter or both.
And
perhaps even on a relatively short time scale, like 10 to 7, 10 to 8 years.
There's another possibility proposed by your opinion, which I don't believe. Because we have such a short time from the maximum point where it's stable, Greenberg found that you could put the system on the other side of the resonance, okay, and still decay down. And he found a route around the instability, okay, where it could come back and then decay to where we see it today. The difficulty with that is, for example, is placing the system initially.
Yeah,
in that precise resonance on the other side of still more posterous on the other side of this of the current size zero of 2n n1 minus 2n2.
Wouldn't there still be a time scale problem? I mean, you know, if you sort of have to postulate that you have eccentricities higher than 0.012 in the past, because it's constantly decaying because of the dissipation in Io, and you don't have to go back very many e-holding times for damping of the eccentricity before the eccentricity is 1, which is ridiculous.
Exactly.
And damping time is much smaller than the solar system.
As soon as you increase the eccentricity, the dissipation goes way up. And so
even if that scenario worked, it still fails, but only a little bit further back in history.
Exactly.
Which is still, you know, recent compared to the age of the solar system.
So it's up to the theorists to find a way to have Q of Jupiter. And there's also bounds on the Qs of other gaseous planets,
Adam pointed out, and he reminded me this morning, that there's a very strong lore bound on queue of urines. Because there's a very nice and very upper bound on the queue of urines. In order to move Miranda far enough to account for its current high inclination orbit, it's a 4-degree inclination orbit, and that comes out nicely from the evolution of pushing Miranda into this into a resonance, which has since been disrupted. Okay, but in the process, it jacks up. It's an inclination type resonance instead of an eccentricity type resonance. It jacks up the inclination to 4 degrees, where it becomes unstable. And it's very fascinating dynamics to watch this thing go through. And two groups, Tidmore and Wisdom, looked at this very carefully, as well as in Mahalter, in their thesis.
So what's the Q there?
It's about, it's
less than 3 times 10 to the 4.
So what's the orbital period of the system?
Miranda's orbital period, I've forgotten.
It's probably a few days.
A few days.
And there's a constraint, which is perhaps slightly less robust, but still probably okay for Neptune. The Q is less than 3 times 10 to the 5.
So gaseous bodies are finding a way of dissipating.
So I'll quit there.
Can I ask a question? I thought I heard as we went along with the Olivia, I think you described it as Puffia, the planet Jupiter.
Yes.
Was less dissipated.
Oh, right. Why is that necessary?
Where's the obvious flaw in the intuition?
Why is that necessary? I clutched at Lindzen to get an explanation for this, which is probably wrong. That if in the fluffy state of Jupiter, it's probably fully convective, no stably stratified regions. But now it's settled down, therefore no dissipation. And now it's settled down, does have a stably stratified region, and you have a high dissipation. That, in other words, you need, if Io is dissipating enough to account for the dissipation in Io, and of course, in Io out today, if it's that dissipated at the present time, it could not have been that dissipated in the past. Otherwise, Io would have moved farther away. And you see it.
Yep.
So we have to have it in the past being undissipated to keep Io close, but now turn on the dissipation to melt Io. Because it's stable.
If you take David's mechanical single spring description as the given introduction, you'd think that the earlier phase of the planet would be mechanically less rigid somehow.
But yes.
Well, I think until we understand the mechanism, there's no information to go by.
You have to have both the specific mechanisms. I was only using that. You know, in the limit of an invisible truth, you're in big trouble.
That's the basic point.
But actually, when you look at the evolution calculation, since there's a relative zone, it's bigger, not in terms of pressure scale heights, but in terms of difference between the adiabatic and the radiative, so the Brent Weisselhoff frequency is higher
in the past
before, because
we always have a radiative zone no matter what time it is.
More important before, because basically you have two conflicting things. You have a larger heat flux, but it's more than compensated by the fact that the radiative region is tied to a temperature,
okay,
and it gets to lower pressures.
Yeah. Okay.
So the lower pressures are idealizing.
Now it would be interesting to look at the dynamics of functions and all this other stuff and moving up to see whether Tristan's can actually accomplish what we need to accomplish.
I have a question. What about the problem you mentioned? It's still a problem that you have another way of having an upper bound of QJ that is too low?
Heat flux measurements give an upper bound on QJ, which is too low compared to these historical balance on QJ. In other words, if the heat flux is, sorry, I may have to repeat, I can find the numbers.
Is what? Is two heat flux?
Well, it's heat flux mean?
For me, yeah, that's how it is.
If the heat flux is 25 millimeters, I get a QJ bound of 2.6 × 10⁴.
If it is an equilibrium, but on the sidewalk, that we call it convinced. If it's an equilibrium, once you lay aside, it's all it can possibly be.
Okay.
That's the point.
But there's a very strong because, you know, the both things go into the energy vibration.
Some modules, some states are simultaneously
Essentially, you see a lot of partial relationship fully balanced. Or it's a final 6 degree, you can still cancel the energy. So it implies that the expense.
There's enough room. You also need to realize that there are two sources of disequilibrium. Time variation of the Curia and time variation of the Jupiter. We don't know which one was most important. You could imagine either of them having large variations of Curia.
Mm-hmm. When this first came out, we said, we're just seeing the system in a periodic state, at the peak of its dissipation. And then when it gets rid of all its heat, it'll cool down and the dissipation will drop, and we'll see a period of decades where it's not very much hot, there's not much heat coming out. David's work on that.
I have a paper with a bunch of candidates where we actually have the Q of Io doing this. Mm-hmm. We actually have a mechanism for doing that.
What's the thermal time for Io? I mean, is the time for heat to transport across the
rest? If you take these very high heat flows and ask how long would it take to eliminate the current eccentricity down to a value, half as large or something, it's quite short. It's only 10 million years. So you know that something's got to happen on a relatively short time scale compared to the age of the system. Otherwise, you're in big trouble. I've also worked on this heat flow problem, and just to make a comment about that, you really do have to take seriously the likelihood that the heat flow from Io is higher than the early estimates. I've always looked at that so, and it's based on a very simple principle. When you look at an object that's volcanically active and just count the hot spots, you're almost certainly doing an underestimate because there must be, surely, other locations on the surface that were previously hotspots and have cooled off enough so that they're no longer showing up as a strong excess in the thermal infrared, but in an integrated sense are contributing to the heat flow. And you can show for the step-on solution, the standard problem of taking a lake of liquid and letting it freeze on the surface and cool over a square root of time, you can show that background heat flow can easily exceed what you get from the hotspots. And so what I'm getting at, therefore, is that it requires special pleading to say that the heat only comes from the hotspots. It's not a reasonable thing to assume.
The analysis
basically confirms that.
And this is based on observation.
Yes, I do it. So it's not a theory, it's not a theoretical argument anymore, than really observations that come to that. Let's talk about ideas for explaining Q. Bill Hubbard back in 1974 considered the possibility that you could think of the dissipation inside Q as arising from a viscosity, but not a viscosity at the atomic level. We didn't really want to make this formal, but if you insist, we'll do it.
Oh, okay, just to record it, because some people want to watch it.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. If you really don't want to record it, that's okay.
I don't mind being recorded, it's just...
We want this to be held against you, I think.
I'll just remove the more outrageous things on this.
So just go ahead and...
Sure.
All right, thanks very much.